Bring New Orleans Back committee together, and it was a whole bunch of top business and professionals and educator people, various community leader types.
Yeah.
And they hired a top planning firm. Mm-hmm. And the planning firm said, well, you're just going to have to just forget about certain parts of New Orleans. Mm-hmm. Not resettle them. And so that politically was just totally unacceptable for Ray Nagin. And so he just took that report and threw it off to the side.
Okay.
And members of that, of his committee at that point said, I'm not going to get involved in anything else again. They were so angry. And so then we bought, 14 months later, we bought a new planning team together, which was comprised of top-level planners and architects, the big-name architects and planners.
Okay.
All over the country. And started another planning process that was necessary because the state of Louisiana and the federal government said they wouldn't give us any more money unless we had a plan.
So the official advice that Ray Nagin got was basically just to abandon whole chunks of the city.
Mm-hmm.
And
in the Bring New Orleans Back planning process, that's what their position was, that some low-lying areas should not be redeveloped. Which,
what were they going to do? Just bulldoze them? Mm-hmm. Just leave them?
They have to buy all the land and tell people they couldn't live there anymore. And so that created a political backlash that, in a lack of trust that developed among all the citizens. What is this? Mm-hmm. You're taking our community away from us.
And was it kind of grassroots community action that rejected that approach, or was it a kind of combination? Was the mayor?
It was.
How did it work?
It was just a politically untenable position to take. You can't tell big chunks of, you know, these people were, in many cases, they were already back restoring their houses.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
spent money and hired electricians and plumbers and carpenters, and they're rebuilding, and all of a sudden somebody says, you can't do that anymore, we're going to bulldoze it. And the political backlash was just horrendous. So then, it was like 15 months later, we started the Unified New Orleans planning process. I went down to the first meeting, the 5-hour meeting, and I was quoted in the Times-Picayune, the local paper, saying, hi, it's been 15 months, why don't we do something? What is this planning? But it was required by the government. So we went through a series of, every neighborhood had its own planner, and we had some great people in town. But they all went out and said, well, what is your vision for the future of your neighborhood? And so everybody talked about their vision. And, you know, obviously, that wasn't going to get funded. So basically, we were spending all this time and effort and government money creating expectations that would not be met, which is just a horrible thing to do to people that had been through what we'd been through.
Mm-hmm.
And so that process went through, and then nothing happened with that, except that it was passed up through Baton Rouge to Washington, and money began to flow 2 years after the storm. But nowhere near enough money to make anything like those plans that had been developed into a reality. And so we struggled along. There's yet another planning process going on now that is really being done well, and they're trying to integrate the material from the first two processes into this plan and really do a professional job. So it's really unwieldy. it's too much to do in one plan, because the city really never has had a really good plan. But the one that's being developed now, once it gets through all the reviews, I think will be a very good plan. So we'll have a good plan, but it's a plan.
Yeah.
What do you do with it? You have to get funding. You have to get real commitments. And We're hoping that, I've been very supportive of this planning process, and also we are going to give this planning process, this plan will be part of this whole process, is to really empower the City Planning Commission and to get the City Council out of making decisions, you know, being the micromanaging role that they were in before. which has been a real problem for the city. So it's a real enhancement of government. This government's going to be much better because of this the process we're going through and the new legislation that's been passed associated with it. So, you know, feeling good about it. It's just,
yeah,
you know, 5 years
still
to get
time.
A plan, and we still don't really have a plan on where the money's coming from. Similar situation in the schools. We've been through three different planning processes related to the schools, and we're still waiting to get that finalized so that we can have a real clear picture of what's going to happen with schools. And it's, you know, it's just so exasperating to, you know, I think, you know, so often I think if government officials don't know what to do, they'll say, well, let's have a blue ribbon committee to develop a plan and some recommendations. And
trash building on this.
And to happen over and over again like this has just been so exasperating. It's just, you know, it's just, So, anyway, I'm griping about government again.
Which, sure.
Let me focus on the people. To me, that's been... I never in my life expected to personally know and have friends that were true heroes. And so many of them. Laura, that you'll meet tonight, came down and
whose house we're staying in.
Laura came down as a volunteer in January 2006. She was from Montreal and decided that. She was visiting family in Florida and decided to come over and volunteer for a week or two. And ended up spending something like 6 months living in a tent down at the mouth of the Mississippi River with no electricity or air conditioning or amenities or anything. With this group called Emergency Communities, which was formed to get down there and work with people who nobody else was working with. The Red Cross couldn't go down there because they were restricted by their rules. So all of the big charity organizations, really, their hands were tied because of their insurance and their, you know, the legal issues and all this stuff. So this emergency community was founded by this 23 at the time, went down there, and they just started feeding people. And I don't know what the total was, but by the time, I guess it was right before they finished, but they served 350,000 meals. I met her 3 years ago right now, in early 2007. She'd been down here about 14 months, and I had after 6 months down there, moved into a little trailer in the lower ninth ward, and continued to feed people as a volunteer. And just, you know, people like that just gave their lives up to just come down here and get, you know, throw themselves into it. And she's been working with volunteers this whole time, and you know, there's just wave after wave after wave of people that come in. And there's lots of Christian groups, lots of counterculture types, I mean, all different kinds of shapes and flavors of volunteers. But I guess I'm most impressed by the response of the religious communities, and that they really walk their talk, and it's been really refreshing to see.
Why do you think people like Laura and the other people that you describe as heroes and that you've worked with, why do you think they did this? You obviously observed it and thought about it really hard. Why did they do that?
I don't know that it's rational. I think people that came down here and saw the need just got so emotionally tied up in the need to do something about it. I've thought a lot about why I've been so intense. Tried to, you know, come back and start a school, get all this other stuff going. And I guess it's... I was a military policeman and had this... kind of developed this ethic that, you know, I'm kind of like in charge of making sure things are okay. And I felt like I can, and if I can, I have to.
Yeah.
And it's really hard. I can't, you know, why did I come back and here, why did Bev and I come back and throw ourselves into starting this school and all this other stuff? Bev's another hero. You know what a CPA is, Certified Public Accountant,
okay.
in this country. I think you call them chartered accountants. There are 350,000 CPAs in the country, and last year Bev was given the Public Service Award, National Public Service Award. So it's a lot of competition for it.
Yeah.
Real proud of her. But she, we started the school, and the Red Cross in the fall of 2006 asked her to join the board. You can imagine what Red Cross had been through in this area. Asked her to join the board to get a financial person that could really grasp the big picture. Mm-hmm. This is the Upper Ninth Ward, and there wasn't a whole lot of flooding here, but there was a lot of wind damage, and it was a very poor, rundown area prior to the storm, but it didn't suffer the kind of damage you'll see when we cross the Industrial Canal.
Okay. So Bev's award was in recognition of
her volunteer work,
okay.
mostly since Katrina, but she's been doing it for a long time. Right. But she won it for 2008. That year she was chairing two foundations, and Red Cross board and the New Charter School board, and we've been pretty engaged.
So
we've also been doing a lot of neighborhood stuff. I was president of our neighborhood association in 2004, and we had all these issues going on with land use battles and everything, and so we decided to put together a plan for our neighborhood, and that's why I kind of got informed about planning prior to Katrina, and that's how I heard about this school that they wanted to develop and everything, because associated with me going out to that neighborhood association here with their plan. So we've been having some knowledge of the planning processes and knowing the planning experts prior to Katrina. I felt like, let me jump into that. And so we've been going to meetings around planning and citizen participation in planning, those kinds of things. And there's a new association, an organization called the Neighborhoods Planning Network. That is sort of the umbrella organization for neighborhood associations, and they've been working with this other group called the Citizen Participation Project, and we're trying to formalize the organization of neighborhoods and formalize the participation of citizens in governmental functions. I'm big on the land use issues. I guess where I started off, but this meeting we were supposed to have tonight, it got set back till Friday, but it's the Neighborhoods Partnership Network's monthly publication called The Trumpet. It's their release. We're going to have the release part of there tonight. Okay. I've gotten involved with that because I think using media of various types it's just really important that we do that right in terms of creating the engagement. And my friend Jackie Clarkson, who was the president of the city council when we got this last planning process approved and given it the force of law to get citizen, it's going to have citizen participation in it, remove the government from some of the decision making. And Jackie asked me to help her get it passed, and so I've been involved in it pretty deeply and have a lot of ownership of getting this plan in place. And along with the changes in the government decision-making processes that are really going to enhance the whole government process. Okay, this is the Industrial Canal, and we're going from the upper to the lower Ninth Ward. It was divided when they dug this canal back somewhere, I don't know where it was exactly. But the levee that broke is right along here. You can see that's all new levee. That whole thing fell down.
Yep.
And this is where the biggest surge was. And again, these homes that were here were modest homes that somebody in the family had built years ago, and often most of them didn't have insurance or So they, this was the area of the worst devastation.
Okay.
The ones on this side, you can see there's still some old houses there that made it, but across that flood, it was like a wall of water, and the houses were pushed back 6-8 blocks.
And we've just, okay.
I can't turn here, I gotta go to the next one.
So, what you see on all of these buildings, on lots of these buildings, are the initials TFW. Spray painted on? I've seen lots of ones where they've...
There's a circle with an X, and then they talk about how many people were found dead or whatever, and a zero will be...
So there's some...
That's what the National Guard searched every house for bodies and pets, and if they found something in it, they put markings on there.
Okay, so they had some kind of code for that.
The zeros are good. They didn't find any bodies.
Right, okay.
I can't tell you what all the codes mean. Laura might be able to. She's been spending a lot of time down here with these people. You may have heard about Brad Pitt's project.
Yeah.
These are some of the houses that group is working on. Make It Right Foundation. If y'all want to stop for pictures anywhere, let me know. You can see they're building the houses with solar panels. And
These are the Make It Right Foundation.
It's quite an effort. He's another good example of how some of the citizens that have chosen to roll their sleeves up and come down here and try to make a difference.
Mm. So
this area was nothing but concrete slabs with steps going up where the house used to be right after the storm.
So right where we're looking now, where all the concrete blocks are,
The steps there. The whole neighborhood was full of those.
Right.
Those kinds of scenes. And then if you go back about 5 or 6 blocks, then there were some houses that were still standing, pushed off their foundation, with other houses pushed up against them. Houses sitting on cars. It was just.
Could we just pause for a minute?
Oh, sure. Any time. Just let me know. Yeah, there's one that survived. A taller one.
What's happened to the people who were here? Do they still own the property?
Yeah. I'm sure they still own it. They, again, probably received some compensation from the government, but not enough to rebuild. And there were offers made about you could either, if you wanted to come back, you could get cash to rebuild, or you could get, or they would buy the property from you, and the state would. There were federal funds to fund some of that. So a lot of the elderly just, like, there was no way they could come back.
Mm-hmm.
And another part of that tragedy too is a lot of people with children decided that they really didn't want to come back and try to raise their kids in this environment. They were living somewhere else, and so where they had decent schools and they didn't have all the trauma to put up with. And it was a very rational decision not to come back. And even though this is home for generations, they felt like they just simply couldn't do that to their children. And I think a lot of us that are involved in education reform now, we wanted to fix education before, but these kids really deserve special attention. the educa- education system within the city of New Orleans, a public education system. It was basically abandoned. The idea of paying for good public education was scrapped by a lot of people that reacted to the integration of the schools in 1960, in the 60s.
Yeah.
And they moved out of town, and the ones that stayed, but there a lot of lots of them put their children in either private schools or Catholic schools. And so they got very resistant to paying any taxes for public schools because their children didn't go to them anymore. Mm-hmm. So the quality of public schools had really suffered. And now it's really been gratifying to me to see the support for strengthening and refining and reforming our public education coming from a lot of my conservative Republican friends that never did it before, but they're responding to the opportunity now, and we have a tremendous amount of effort going into fixing public education. It's and the when the state took over all the schools, all the teachers were laid off. Everything, you know, the whole system shut down for a year.
Okay.
Almost the whole system. And so when the charter schools started opening up, and then when the public schools started opening up, all the teachers had to be rehired. Mm-hmm. And so all the unions were displaced. There aren't any unionized teachers in the city of New Orleans anymore.
Okay.
Which, given the positions the union had been taking, corruptness of it all is a very big positive, but there's all this tension around it. The national unions are very concerned that if this non-union experiment works, it's a threat to them everywhere. And so they You don't really know how to measure these things exactly, when that anxiety is there, and they have the kind of resources they have, they're involved in this education experiment we have, and how it all shakes out. You know, it's way over my head, but there's a lot of tension around it, and I have a corporate human resources background, and I'm realistic about how sometimes unions are necessary and sometimes they get out of hand, and I'm not a staunch believer or non-believer. Mm-hmm. I think that we all should find ways of working together to put the best schools together to raise our kids properly if we can, because if we don't, their lives are not going to what they should have been.
So there's something for me about, you know,
I want to get a shot at the levee here. This is the Lower Nine. This is the levee that broke, that's been totally replaced. That's real right now. Seen a drawbridge before? It's just stop. If he's going to drive a school bus over it, I guess it's okay. How many miles it was from, of course it goes on all the way down to the mouth of the Mississippi River from there. There's a whole parish below this that was totally flooded.
How far is that?
Down to the mouth is probably 75 miles, but it wasn't that populated. I mean, it was pretty, a lot of marshy area. But there were communities down there that just got totally wiped out. And people came back and were living in tents and eating at emergency mm-hmm. communities and trying to figure out what to do about their home and their livelihood. And,